Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Let me take that off the screen for a minute. I'm not quite ready for that. We are talking about the George Floyd, the Derek Chauvin sentencing today regarding the George Floyd murder. I hope that you guys are able to join us. I am not in my studio room today. My computer, it has crashed and I cannot seem to get it going good. So we're doing this the best way we can today. But stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment. All right. We are back. I hope that intro, I'm gonna try to see if I can see any comments from here because I don't have my normal setup as far as controls are concerned. So I'm not sure how well you guys the playback is for you in terms of you watching it. So if it's a little shaky, if it's a little crazy, I won't know until the programming is over. So we're just gonna roll with it just like it is. I want to make sure that you guys like and share the video. I think that this is an important subject for the regarding the Chauvin verdict. It has very strong implications for police reform and certainly criminal justice reform as well. And so we want to take a look at all of that and what that means. I'm trying to get a setup at the same time for live calls through the blog through the radio program. So, but regardless, I am okay. So, again, this verdict and well, the sentencing as well, which is what we're talking about today, has very, very strong implications for police reform that we are continuing to fight for in the realm of social justice and also for criminal justice reform, and because it's going to set a precedent. I really was interested in hopefully taking some online calls. I don't know if that's going to work today with the limited setup that I have today to see how you guys are feeling about the verdict. I've been, of course, scouring around social media trying to look at and get a feel for what people are thinking and saying in terms of how they feel about the verdict. Most people say it's not enough time, simple as that. It's a slap in the face. It's a slap. Some say it's a slap on the wrist, and some say it's a slap in the face. And there's two very varying degrees of emotion there. But, you know, all under the umbrella of not being satisfied. And then you have people that say, listen, this is a step in the right direction. It gives us hope. We are satisfied that he even got time in the first place, because we know that that normally never even happens. In fact, he was the first officer in the state of Minnesota in terms of a white officer being convicted of a murder of a black civilian. So there's a precedence there. And then there's very few cases. The Amy, oh, wow, what was her name, that killed the guy in Dallas. I think he was in Dallas, in his own apartment. She said she thought she was in her apartment and killed the guy. Remember, the judge was hugging her and all of that and gave her a Bible after the sentencing. It wasn't Amy Cooper. I forget her name. But she was one of the only few who have been convicted in any of these cases. Many thousands of families have not gotten justice at all. Eric Garner's family never got justice. Trayvon Martin's family never got justice. Never, forget justice, had a day in court. Philando Castile, all of these different high profile cases, Freddie Gray, these people never even got a day in court. So a lot of folks feel that this is good. This is progress. But we know that even in the midst of progress, there is much, 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 much more work to be done. And I really wanted to talk to you guys because I wanted to see what you were thinking in terms of why do you think that they went on ahead and convicted Chauvin in this case? Was it the video? Because all of these cases now have video. I watched a guy in a situation in Rock Hill, South Carolina yesterday or Friday, where the officers roughed the guys up. Two brothers were being arrested. They said they found contraband on them, but there's a question about that. But the issue was the excessive force that was used in arresting those guys.
The young lady that, that video
went viral, ended up on the local news out there and everything. And so came to the attention of the NAACP, other civil rights activists and legal representatives and all of that kind of stuff. So everything is being videoed now. So was that the significance of his conviction in this case with Derek Chauvin and the killing of George Floyd? You guys can kind of put your comments in the comment section, and probably after this broadcast, I'll be in the comment section and responding to your thoughts. But I really want you guys to be able to talk about this. And this is important because we have to be able to process. There's so much going on. We're still in the middle of a pandemic. The coronavirus, COVID-19, is still very much going on. It's COVID-21 now with this Delta variant and all of that stuff. So it's a lot to talk about with that, which was my intention, original intention for today. And then I kind of shifted gears and decided to go ahead on and deal with this sentencing because it is certainly a monumental event. And it's monumental particularly for the Black community. It's monumental for police departments, the culture of policing, and how they operate and how they function. And it's very, very, very interesting. I'm limited in my abilities today because I'm not taping from my normal studio room. So I wanted to show you guys some video and some commentary with some other folks, because this is not a legal analysis that we're doing today. We're looking at the social and political aspects of the implications of the precedents that this
verdict will set or could set if that, you know, if it is not finessed. And I say that because if you look at the, I've gone through the entire 22-page document memorandum attached to the sentencing by Judge Peter Cahill, I believe is how you pronounce his name, C-A-H-I-L-L. He was the presiding judge over the Chauvin case. He attached a 22-page memorandum to his sentencing. And it is quite interesting the language and how. So I do see where there are some loopholes, and I see that there's some openings that were left for appeals and things like that. And they were talking to, I believe, Eric Gardner's mother. Eric Gardner was, of course, killed in New York where he was selling the cigarettes, and he was also complaining. He was the first to complained to the police that he could not breathe. If you remember that, I'm sure you do. You could, you know, how can you forget it? They talked to his mother yesterday, and she said that one of the things that she's concerned about is because he One of the things that, let's see, did I lose you guys? I had some kind of interference right there. One of the things that she says she's concerned about is, you know, will his time be reduced in the appeal process? And then he has some other things to deal with because he's got some federal charges coming down, and they only talk about these federal charges. This guy has a lot of legal situations going on, and it was interesting at the sentencing the other day, Friday, where he asked for his lawyer, was trying to get him probation. The prosecution is asking for 30 years, and the defense is asking for probation in a murder. Shoot your best shot, I guess. I don't know. But the thing of it is that in reading this memorandum, you do see where the judge did leave openings. And if you watch that sentencing, it seemed to be like this judge really didn't even want to sentence him at all. I don't know. That's the impression I got. Like he was explaining away why he had to even sentence him at all. It was very interesting. But I think that, and I'm going to go through some of the documents and point out some specific things. But I think that what is most important at this point, well, one of the most important things at this point, because this case is done. Can't retry the man. It is done. Hello, everybody who's ever in here. I cannot see who all is watching. I'm sorry, guys. I'm on my tablet today. I'm not in my studio room, and I cannot see who's on here. But if you make a comment, let me see if I can see it. Anything. Well, if you make any comments or anything like that, and I can't see them, forgive me today. I went on ahead and went live because I didn't want to cancel again. I've been off for about 2 weeks. So hello and welcome to everybody. Welcome, 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 welcome. Thank you for tuning in. Please hit the like buttons. Please subscribe. Like the Facebook page. Subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you're not on YouTube, go to YouTube and subscribe. It helps my algorithms and all of that good stuff. So I was saying, you know, the most important thing, one of the most important things that we get to at this point, because the trial is over, the guy is sentenced, he's going to jail. How long is in question? But what I think that it's important that we begin to focus on and put pressure on Congress for to pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. This is very, very important. And as we begin to go through the sentencing guidelines and all of that stuff, you'll begin to see some things that really, really needs to be dealt with in policing. We talked about last year, the history of policing, that the police started off as slave patrols. They have never let go of that mentality. They talk about how Chauvin, even on his side jobs, working in a nightclub after hours and all of that kind of stuff, that his employer, in fact, him and George Floyd did work at the same place. They're not sure if they actually knew each other, but they certainly were familiar with each other because they worked at the same nightclub. Of course, for Chauvin, it was a moonlighting thing, but regardless, The people that own the club talked about how he was particularly aggressive on the nights that they served a black clientele. So they probably had, I don't know, an R&B night or a hip hop night or something like that, as most clubs, nightclubs do. If you know anything about the nightclub scene, you know, they'll have jazz on Sundays, maybe blues on Friday, pop, you know, during the week, you know, they have different genres of music that they play on certain nights. A lot of them do. Some of them, some nightclubs are different, but a lot of them do that. So they talked about that and how he was particularly aggressive in pepper spraying their black clients. And calling in the cops for backup when he had an altercation, when he was not there on official police duty. So this is something that they had to deal with him all the time. So this guy, clearly, I think we can safely assume that he has a race issue. So I think that in the short for long of it is that we need to focus on this George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. That's where we are now. I think that the energy needs to turn to that being passed. The House passed it back in March. And so then the Republicans wanted some. They don't want the qualified immunity where the officers can be held personally liable for any misconduct. That was a sticking point for some of the Republicans. And there was a few other things. We'll take a look at it. But these are some of the issues that they are complaining about and want amended in the bill. And so now they're saying the other day, Biden wanted the act passed prior to the Chauvin sentencing. They didn't make that deadline. However, Republican Tim Scott, I think he's a senator of Texas. But Tim Scott, who else is working on this? Cory Booker, Democrat, and somebody else. They have seemed to come to some type of agreement as to what amend or how to amend the police reform bill to everybody's satisfaction, they claim. And so it should be now heading to the Senate to be passed. I have not yet seen those adjustments. I will be looking for them. They should be posted by now because this is a couple of days ago that they said that they came to this agreement. The George Floyd, but I want to read, see if I can kind of give you a little bit or the highlights of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. and its intention. And then we'll go over some of the Derek Chauvin sentencing information and talk about some of those things. So the Policing Act is supposedly a comprehensive approach to hold police accountable and racial profiling change. Change the culture of law enforcement, empower our communities, and build trust between law enforcement and our communities by addressing systemic racism. My dog is barking. Y'all just ignore him. Let's see here. Build trust between law enforcement and our communities by addressing systemic racism and bias to help save lives. So these are some of the things that they are saying is the purpose of the reform bill. They want to create a situation where lives are not lost at the hands of police anymore. The Justice and Policing Act would, number one, establish a national standard for the operation of police departments. This is important because every police department, there's no standard modus operandi for training police. Every police department has a different methodology that they utilize to train their officers. This is very serious. Some police departments, and they have different modalities that they use. But one of the things that I have learned in this process since we first started looking at this last year is that, like, some police departments, for example, allow chokeholds and some don't. Detroit is one of them. Former police chief Craig, who retired June 1st, is now running on the Republican ticket for governor, or going to anyway, for the 2022 governor race. Certainly advocated for his officers to be able to do chokeholds. This police maneuver is very controversial. So is one other one that was used on George Floyd, the knee on the neck. This is a literal police maneuver. They call it positional asphyxiation or postural asphyxia. In policing, they call it, it's a term that they call it in policing. It is called proning, I believe. In policing, the maneuver is called, prone restraint, P-R-O-N-E. Learn this terminology, prone restraint. This is a literal police maneuver. One of the things that Derek Chauvin said in his defense, through his attorney, of course, because he didn't speak until the end, is that he didn't feel that he should be held criminally responsible because he was just doing his job. And in a sense, he is correct. However, because of these aggravating circumstances or extenuating circumstances, there were four that he was found guilty of. The particular cruelty that he showed to George Floyd, he kept his knee on it. For instance, one of the things that they said was excessive cruelty was that he continued to asphyxiate him with his knee on his neck, one knee on the neck and one knee on the back, while two other officers sat on his buttocks, the other one sat on his legs. And they did this for an extra two and a half minutes after one of the officers recognized that there was no pulse. He had passed out, George Floyd. He wasn't dead yet. He was passed out. and they continued the asphyxiation maneuver without letting him up and putting him on his side. The man was already handcuffed, so there was no imminent threat to the officers. George Floyd was a big guy. However, he was already restrained. So this was one of the aggravating circumstances that the judge allowed. And there was some finessing with that. We'll get into that some more. So what we're talking about right now is the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Okay, so how police departments train, having a standardized training procedure for all police departments is vital. It's critical. You know, no more, you know, this is how it's done here, this is how it's done there. It makes it very difficult, and it creates loopholes when you get down to prosecuting officers for misconduct. We're talking about misconduct now. You know, this is critical. But as I want to make sure that I emphasize prone restraint. That is what is called in policing. It is nothing more than asphyxiation or suffocating someone with your knees. This is a legal police maneuver. I have never heard of it. The only thing the media seems to talk about is chokeholds. Okay. In fact, Derek Chauvin had a case in 2017 where he used this same maneuver on George Floyd on a 14-year-old black boy. And I'm trying to think, did he kill him? I think he killed him. The judge, this judge, Peter Kale, who oversaw this George Floyd murder trial, not Chauvin's murder trial of George Floyd, wouldn't allow that information, that case to be presented against him in this case. It was totally left out. However, in the civil action that's brought against him and under the federal case that is still, those charges are still pending, that information is going to come out. That information is being allowed for the civil action for human rights violation. He's being sued for human rights violation. And Derek Chauvin is quite well off financially, by the way. Quite well off. He's also got charges pending with the feds for 19 counts for tax evasion. Him and his ex-wife. She divorced him the day after he got arrested. But they lied about their income. They lied about they depreciated their property values and all of these other types of things. And so they also have a federal case pending for tax evasion. They said he failed to report upwards of almost $500,000 a year. What officer makes $500,000 a year? His wife was a real estate agent and a photographer, but this man had money. It's very interesting to look into the background of this thing. But let's keep going with the Policing Act, because I want to make sure that I cover this. All right. So we talked about the need for the standardized operation of police departments. Then number two, it is necessary to mandate data collection on police encounters. Mandate data collection. That means when they come in contact with a civilian, that it would be mandated that they can't turn their cameras off. You know, you hear all the time about the camera wasn't working, you know, whatever. So this would be a data collection during police encounters would be mandated. What's number three? Reprogram existing funds to invest in transformative community-based policing programs. That's probably when they're talking about bringing in social workers and all of those types of things and other mental health professionals. Of course, we hear all the time about police encountering people with schizoaffective disorders and all of those types of things where they do not understand the mental disparity of these individuals, and they kill them and all of those types of things, not understanding that some of them have limited language and so forth, and of course uncontrolled emotions, and the officers have no training in that particular area. However, they do have training for medical intervention, so they are well trained in CPR and all of those types of things to provide medical aid to a suspect in their custody. This was one of the aggravating circumstances in the Chauvin case, because he not only failed to render aid, he wouldn't allow anyone else to aid him. There was, in fact, medical personnel on that site at the time of the George Floyd arrest. We all know that. We saw the video. So that was another aggravating circumstance in the determination of his judgment. Okay, let's see here. Let's keep going. Number four, streamline federal law to prosecute excessive force and establish independent prosecutors for police investigations. That's important as well. They want to, you know, have police, other police not investigating other police. They want to bring in independent agencies or whatever to, if there is an issue with police misconduct, that it would be investigated externally rather than from the inside out, because of the culture of policing, you know, that blue wall of silence and all of that stuff that they have going on. They prefer to have it bring in outside investigators in these cases. The language of the bill is identical to the version passed in the 116th Congress with the support of the entire Democratic caucus and three Republicans. So again, this George Floyd Justice in Policing Act was passed by the previous Congress. You remember a couple days before Joe Biden was inaugurated, we got the 117th. We're now on the 117th Congress. Raphael Warnock out of Georgia and all of them were brought in, and so forth. So, but the 116th Congress did pass this act, along with, what are they saying, three Republicans. So again, this is what its intention is. It is to work to end racial and religious profiling, save lives by banning chokeholds and no-knock warrants. Again, this is what I'm talking about. They keep talking about these chokeholds. They also mentioned no-knock warrants. That's another thing. But I am wondering why these prone restraints are not included with this in this bill. I'm just now literally in reviewing and preparing for this broadcast today regarding Chauvin's sentence, learning about this asphyxiation restraint. I had no idea. I mean, as the knee on the neck was atrocious as it was. However, it is literally a legal police maneuver that is allowed in Minnesota. We're sitting here thinking he's got a lot of nerve to ask for probation in a murder case, but this is the reason why. Because he's saying, I wasn't trying to kill him, I was doing my job. It's very interesting. So this is how, you know, again, this is how these things get finessed, because we don't know all of the story. So once again, this is a maneuver that needs to be indicated specifically in this bill, because it is associated with high risk and for death. they are trained in this maneuver and they understand the risk of death when you asphyxiate somebody because you are literally suffocating them. Again, one of the extenuating circumstances, aggravating circumstances that was held against Chauvin because he knows full well that people can die from this maneuver. And when you apply it, there are certain precautions that you have to take and relief that you have to give the individual to prevent, hopefully prevent their death. He continued to move forward regardless. So this is what we're talking about. Okay. So again, the bill would save lives by, or is intended to save lives by banning chokeholds and no-knock warrants, limit military equipment on American streets, and require body cameras. We talked about the body cameras, but this limiting military equipment on American streets. This is what happened during the Black Lives Matter protests. If you remember last year, they brought in a National Guard and all of that kind of stuff. Now, that, I don't think that'll ever change. States do it. That's part of your state's rights. However, Trump was trying to, and they just found a tape of him saying, shoot them all, kill them. You know, I'm sick of this. Just kill them. Bring in the military and shoot them. But they want to be able to, you know, the military is not intended to police, manage police Americans on American soil. That is not the use and design of the military. Trump wanted to use the military to squelch the protests. So this is also important. This will be, you know, prevent the next guy who's going to get in there and try this stuff again. Trust me, that's going to happen from being able to do that. Then again, hold police accountable in court. This is important. Now, what I'm not seeing is them being able to have personal financial liability where they are losing their pensions and so forth. As it relates to police misconduct, if an officer is held criminally liable for a death or abuse of his power and things like that, then one of the things that has been proposed when the Black Lives Matter movement was at more active last year, visibly active, is that you know, that their personal pensions should be on the line. They should not be able to kill people, go to prison for, because they're not going to get the same time as everybody else. We see that this 10 years seems to be the going rate for an officer if and in the rare instance that he is convicted. This is about what it boils down to. Chauvin is going to do about 10 years. I don't know, maybe 12. You know, they want him to do 2/3 of the sentence, 22 and a half years. So I think it comes down to 12 and a half years, something like that. You all have to correct me if I'm wrong in the comments. I'll see it after the broadcast. But I think that he's probably going, and then he has credit for 199 days. At the time of the sentencing, which was Friday. So he's already done about six and a half months. So he'll get credit for that. And, you know, then there's the appeal. And again, there's been some openings left for the appeal. What was I saying, guys? Holding them personal liability for officers. And then, okay, the other items are investigate police misconduct. They also want to use this bill to create a database of officers who have a history of misconduct. Derek Chauvin had 19 complaints basically, that's a complaint a year. I believe it was 19. Let me see. He had a whole litany of complaints and two that resulted in disciplinary action, I believe. But this guy has a history of misconduct. Now, here's the problem with Chauvin. And probably, again, we're talking, you know, we have to bring up the issue of the culture of policing. He had all these complaints. Only one or two, whichever it was, resulted in disciplinary action. In the meantime, he kept getting all these medals and stuff for valor. I'm paraphrasing, but you know what I'm saying. I'm not looking at my notes. Usually I have my screen and I can, you know, go to whatever information I need. Right now I got these glasses on and this little light is not working, so I can't see these pieces of paper. But he continued to get all of these honors and praises. So they're essentially rewarding this bad behavior. Not in a literal sense directly, but what is happening is that this guy, if you can picture it, was probably getting the message that he was invisible, he was untouchable. You know, probably a department favorite. You know, he gets the job done. So in the middle of all of these complaints and murders and, you know, like I said, this is not the first time he's did this knee on the neck stuff. He did it to a 14-year-old kid. I believe he killed him. So, you know, this is what we're talking about. This is what is happening. And so in the meantime, they're giving him all of these honors and awards and medals and all. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, for real, I'm going to put the link to these documents in my description box so you guys can go back and look at this stuff. It's amazing. And then we wonder why and how and all of that stuff. So here we go. Justice and Policing Act. Let's finish this up. I want to give you a couple of pointers and then I can let you go. Change the culture of law enforcement with training and build integrity and trust, whatever. Improve transparency by collecting data on police misconduct and use of force. Yeah, so this is that database. I think that's a good idea to create that database for officers who have a history, because what happens is a lot of times they get fired from one department. We talked about this last year, and go and get hired at another one. And their record never follows them. So the next department never even really necessarily knows that this guy has problems. Okay? So that's a problem. That's an issue. So let me give you a few things out of, because I'm trying to get through this, guys. But this is like really strange recording like this. I don't have my controls. I do want to run. Well, before I talk about this, let's run our ad from the Nikita Nicole podcast. Did y'all check out Nikita Nicole yesterday? Her podcast premiered yesterday here on YouTube and Facebook Live. It was wonderful. They had a great conversation. She had an HR specialist on that's talking about the employment gap that the market is, the job market is continue to currently experiencing a shortage in people to employ and all of those types of things. If you're a small business owner, you would have gotten some great information on that. Then they went on into some things with mental health and dealing with that. But however, she's on every Saturday at 4:00, again, on YouTube and Facebook Live. Her YouTube channel is Nikita Nicole. I'll have to go back and link that in as well in the description box so you guys can follow her. Also on social media, she's on Instagram and Twitter. Her Facebook page is Dippity Doo Productions. But I have to get you know, get the correct information, link it in the description box so that you guys can check her out on Saturdays. Let's run her ad real quick and let me prepare for or take a look at my notes here and move on to the next thing. I want to look at this sentencing decision and give you guys some information, important information I think that you need to know about that. We'll be right back.
Nikita Nicole, and I'm starting my very own podcast called The Spots We Miss. Together, we'll go on a journey of self-discovery, evolution, as we forget those things that are behind us and press into those things that are ahead of us, uncovering the spots we miss. Join me June 26, 2021 for real talk, real ideas, real love. See you there.
Okay. I'm not sure what is happening. All right. So let me give you a couple of things that I want to make sure that I point out in this sentencing memorandum. This is unprecedented as well. But again, I want to say this again. This is an important case. It's very important in the under the issue of social justice, civil rights, human rights, all of that kind of stuff. This is a significant case. This is like the Dred Scott case that we talked about back from the 1800s that set up the Jim Crow system. This case is that big, is that monumental, is that important. We need to be aware of the details of it. We need to be aware of how the appeals are handled, because this is going to set a precedence, and we want it to be the right precedence, not just for officers to get a conviction, but for them to get so that the punishment is proportionate to the crime. A regular civilian would not get out in 10, 12 years for murdering somebody, you know. And so, you know, this was, and this is one of the things that we talked about. I probably will post a video of Judge Mathis. Judge Mathis he's hot about this, about this verdict, because this is, again, especially with the aggravating circumstances. And what happens is, a lot of times, again, you know, these things are finesse. So they will move the line to suit their needs. State law, state sentencing guidelines, let me say that specifically, in Minnesota, says that only one aggravating circumstance is necessary to give the judge leverage, because it's still at his discretion, to give the judge leverage to apply a sentence two times above the top range. So if a crime has a range of, in this case, I think, let's say 120 years to 200, I mean, 120 months to 280 months based on the second degree. Now, you got to remember, he's convicted of second degree murder. Let's see. Unintentional second degree murder. That is what he's convicted of. He's not in convicted of first degree. First degree murder implies intent, premeditation, and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not a law professor. I'm a social worker, but I'm just saying what should be general knowledge. Second degree murder is not an accidental death, but there was no premeditation to it. Whatever happened, happened, and it happened at that moment, just in that moment. However, Chauvin was convicted of unintentional second degree murder. So when we look at these years that was attached to the sentence, because I'm thinking 120 months for murder, even for second degree murder, people get life, you know, without parole. However, this is a little different. This is unintentional second degree murder, and then he was charged with third degree manslaughter and something else, whatever it was, which remains unadjudicated, meaning the judge didn't even get acknowledge him because in the sentencing phase of this case, because they were less serious. And so this is also normal, quote unquote, normal for judges to be able to do that. They don't even have to deal with the lesser charges. They can just sentence him for, which is what he did. They just sentenced him for the highest charge, even though he was convicted of all three. That's a finesse. Then, with these aggravating circumstances, there were four. Now, again, like I said, the state sentencing guidelines in Minnesota allows for only one aggravating circumstances that is necessary for a judge to be able to sentence a defendant two times above the top range of the sentence range guideline. So the top of the range is 180 months. Then he could have given him 360. That's why the prosecution asked for 30 years. They said, give him the max, because what the judge did, he said, well, that's sentencing guidelines. I'm not obligated to that. I can still use my own discretion, which is true. But he also used the excuse, if you look at the document, the memorandum, he also used the excuse that, well, the state said, give him the max. They asked me to look for five aggravating circumstances, and he only found him guilty of four. So I want to give you these four. We're going to talk about this again, because there's a lot. I'm skipping over a lot of stuff because I'm not, I'm not recording my normal way today. But I want to give you these four aggravating circumstances, because this is very, very, very important and very tricky in terms of how they are able to do certain things. These are, one is his abuse of power. The second thing is they found him, that's the first aggravating circumstances, his abuse of power and authority. Chauvin was in fact a supervisor on site to one of the officers, a training officer. He was a training officer, basically a supervisor, but he was a training officer to one of the officers on site, not all three, to my understanding. He was a training officer, but he was certainly the ranking officer on site, period. But I think only one was under his direct not care. We'll say care for lack of a better word. Under his direct supervision. I'm sorry. Okay, so his abuse of power was one aggravating circumstance. The second was that he showed a particular cruelty to George Floyd. Again, we talked about how he refused to, not only did he understand the risk of the maneuver that he was using, this asphyxiation maneuver, prone restraint, that he was using. He understood, fully understood the risk of that maneuver, but he refused to render him aid and refused to refuse the aid of other professionals who were on site. So they're saying, okay, well, you were particularly cruel to this person. The third thing is that the offense, his crime was committed in the presence of children. There was a couple of girls on site that ranging from ages 9 to 17. The 9-year-old is reportedly said, watching George Floyd take his last breath, said, "We need to call the police on the police." You know, so this child is sitting there trying to process what she's witnessing. So that was an aggravating circumstance as well. Then the other one that they found him, the judge allowed him to be found guilty of, was that he committed his crime with 3 or more active participants, meaning the other 3 officers who helped him kill him. Well, one, the brother-in-law, the Asian guy, who basically just stood and kept the crowd at bay. But, you know, again, this was still active participation in the murder. And so their case has been pushed back to their trial for the other officers, to my understanding, has been pushed back to March of 2022. Because, and I think they're not in jail either, but I have to get some more information, because of these other charges that have to play. Because initially they were going to hold all 3, they were going to try all of these guys all together. They ended up deciding to separate the Chauvin case, this new DA that came in out there in Minnesota, because the first guy had given him very light charges. The second guy came in and threw the hammer at Chauvin as much as he could anyway. Again, these are not the type of, I'm certain that the charges would have been much more vigorous for a civilian in the same circumstances. Okay, so one is his abuse of power. We're talking about aggravating circumstances that was considered in the sentencing. Number one was his abuse of power. Number two was his particular cruelty to George Floyd. 3, the crime was committed in the presence of children. And 4, the crime was committed with 3 or more active participants. So because of that, he didn't go to the max of 180. He gave him 150 months. With credit for 199 days. Again, that's about 6.5 months. And, you know, and so the defense attorney also tried to bring forth some mitigating circumstances as well. We need to bring this back. I'll probably bring this topic back because I wish I knew what y'all were saying, if y'all are saying anything out there. Wow, this was supposed to be a great conversation today. It turned out to be a monologue. However, the fifth one, because again, like I said, the bar was moved to keep from allow the judge to justify not giving him the max or even above the max. Because again, state sentencing guidelines say only one aggravating circumstance is necessary to sentence a defendant 2 times above the maximum range. He could have gave him 360 months, is the point. This is what Judge Mathis is highly upset about. Okay? So this is important. And so there was a fifth one. You know, they talk about the cruelty, the prolonged restraint of keeping George Floyd pinned down, all three of them, Kevin pinned down at least two of the last 2.5 minutes. Even after they realized he didn't have no pulse, he was passed out. He would have went unconscious at that point. You know, crazy. Let's see here. If I can find the fifth one, I wish I could find it. I cannot see this paper good enough. Yeah. But regardless, we'll talk about it again. We're going to deal with this again because this is, and we're going to go on and deal with some police reform, and we're going to look at some data and all of that stuff. This case is very, very, very important, guys. Very important. And we need to keep our eye on this because this will make a difference in the future, in the future of policing and in the future of civil rights justice, in the future of criminal justice. All of these types of things are going to be highly affected. There's some strong implications with this case on all of these things. And so we need to be aware of it. We need to be aware of it and make sure that we're paying attention to how they handle it from this point, how they handle the appeals, how these federal charges are handled, how these civil charges are handled. And then he's got tax evasion as well. There were some interesting things in his background. And Derek Chauvin is also educated. He's got a lot of training. He started off in the food prep industry. Somewhere he was a prep cook or something. He went to school and got a certificate for that. Then he ended up going to junior college and ended up getting his bachelor's degree in law enforcement. He's highly well-trained, educated. Sometimes we talk about police reform and making sure that the lack of education of these officers, you know, and things like that. Some of them have even less than a high school diploma. A lot of them do, actually. It is a problem. However, this guy is educated in his field. He don't have some random degree and just went into law enforcement. He's a trained law enforcement, not just trained. He's educated in law enforcement. So this is an issue. People had a lot to say about his mother's testimony. I never seen that before anyway, at the time of sentencing and the victim's family give the impact statements and all of that stuff. His mother was allowed to speak, never addressed the family, never offered any condolences, showed any remorse for what her son had been convicted of. I understand, you know, being a mother. However, you know, to at least say, I'm sorry that it happened. So this is, you know, all of these things are problematic. You know, he did come from a divorced family, but it doesn't sound like he had no hard life. If you look into his background. So I'm gonna link all of these documents that I have at this point. This is gonna be an ongoing conversation because and I was gonna talk about, you know, police reform and all of that stuff anyway to follow what's going on with that case, certainly. Or that bill, that legislation. But this is major. And what do I think about it? I think it's progress. I think that the fact that there was a conviction at all is good. Is it enough time? No. Kwame Kilpatrick got 38 years for, you know, RICO.
So this is, you know, so I think this is a step in the right direction. It does not, the work is not over though. So I'm hopeful that if this is handled properly and we keep our eye on the ball and make sure that we're paying attention to what's going on, that this can turn out to be a very solid case of precedence. It's going to be a case of precedence anyway, for other cases like these in the future. However, one of the things I asked you all a question in the beginning, why do you think that there was a conviction at all? Do you think it was the video? I think it was not necessarily the, of course, the video carried the weight of the case because you had the video in every angle. I mean, it, good Lord, everybody on the street that day had to be taping this thing. Even, you know, the street cameras caught it. I mean, it was just, you couldn't ask for better testimony than the cameras that were available to this case. However, I think the global outrage is the issue here. This is just my opinion. I really want to know what you guys think. I wish I could see your comments and talk to you. But I think the global outrage is what did it. And to me, the impression that I got from the judge was, it's like, okay, I'm going to have to hit you. I'm going to leave you some wiggle room for your appeal, but I got to hit you. That's just what I got. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if he'd have gave Chauvin a little wink, you know, like, hey, I tried it. Let's see if you can work with that. Hopefully you can work with that. You know, it was crazy to me. But I hope that you guys got something out of this today. I really do. I feel like, I feel like I'm talking to myself. You know, normally I can't see you, but I can see your comments and things like that. And I feel the interaction. So today, this is just really strange taping like this. But I hope that you guys got some information out of it today. Stay woke. I don't care what nobody say. They want to make it a bad thing for this woke. These Republicans, they're going bananas. Stay woke and stay prayerful. Watch as well as pray. Thank you so much for joining me. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe. Check out Nikita Nicole on Saturdays at 4:00 here on YouTube and Facebook Live. I love you guys. To the moon. See you next week. Take care.